The Schizophrenic Split. Before I read Jung's article on the psychogenesis of schizophrenia, I had studied Reich's report, which is a real-life case report of a successful yet immensely difficult treatment of a young schizophrenic female patient. This report was not available in any bookstore and not even at Amazon.com's amazingly complete out-of-print collection. The only way to get it was to order a photocopy of the unpublished manuscript from the Wilhelm Reich Museum in Wrangley, Maine. As soon as I had read the first page, I was seized to a point that I could not stop reading. While Jung's short article sets a milestone in giving sound reasons to discard the physiological etiology and adopt the psychic etiology for schizophrenia, Reich's contribution takes a perspective not comparable to anything that has been written or practiced on schizophrenia ever before in the West. Reich's approach to schizophrenia can only be fully understood if one is familiar with Reich's revolutionary treatment of neurosis and his discovery of the orgone and, as a consequence, the insight into the characterological and muscular armoring that takes place in neurosis and even more so in psychosis. To summarize Reich's discoveries and revolutionary treatment approach very shortly, let me just list the main features of his approach to holistic healing and then explain them shortly. Mental illness is a distortion of the perception process that comes about through a blockage of the bioenergy flow in the plasma. Neurosis and psychosis are the result of psychosexual disturbances suffered early in life, or more precisely, they are the results of an early infringement in the natural flow of the bioenergy caused by moralistic education. This infringement consists in the social or cultural impediment to discharge the emotional and sexual energies through orgasm. The difficulty in treating neurosis and psychosis resides in a pent-up of DOR, that is, negatively charged orgone. This DOR accumulates in the plasma, creating a characterological and muscular armoring that transforms the afflicted into negative, life-denying, mystic and irrational people. Reich called this process the emotional plague. Reich's healing approach does not use traditional psychoanalysis in that the latter does not touch the body, while Reich found it is the body that offers the entry point to the psychic affliction. Healing is effected in the Reichian approach to healing through dissolving the muscular armor bit by bit through a special Reichian bioenergetic deep tissue massage. Reich construed the orgone energy accumulator, which is a device made from wood and metal plates that serves to accumulate the natural atmospheric orgone in order to help the patient to absorb it into their bioplasmatic system, typically by sitting 1 or 2 hours daily in the box. Reich also developed special shooters that works similarly and can be used ideally while sitting in the accumulator, pointing the shooter to the neuralgic point in the body for immediate relief of pain and healing. From his body work, Reich came to observe the flow of the atmospheric orgone, just as the old sages did thousands of years ago, and could explain scientifically phenomena hitherto unknown, such as aurora borealis or desertification. Reich developed a special cloud buster, a mechanical device consisting of metal tubes erected toward the sky that are connected via thick cables into groundwater. With this device, Reich achieved bringing about rain or stopping rain at will. Again, this almost miraculous impact on the atmospheric orgone was in accordance with what already the sages of old knew and practiced, only with the difference that they could bring about the weather-altering effects telepathically and through prayer, while Reich needed a mechanical device. Reich acknowledged the existence of UFOs and Corpsmen extraterrestrials and delivered abundant proof of his observations in various lengthy reports, part of which he had submitted to the US Air Force for investigation and corroboration. Wilhelm Reich's research has broken ground for present researchers to understand that the core life function is primarily an energy function and not a question of manipulating matter, as it was seen under the Newtonian science paradigm. It is therefore of particular importance how Reich treated successfully an affliction as devastating and as difficult to heal as schizophrenia. It appears that this success was due not only to Reich's lucidity as a researcher, but also to his understanding and compassion for the patient. Reich's attitude is quite different from the somewhat distant and slightly cynical observations of Carl Jung on the subject of schizophrenia. Reich's short introduction in the case study shows empathy and an understanding in the situation of the patient that is unparalleled in psychiatric literature. I quote, "The idea of the devil is a true expression of the distortion of nature in man. No other human experience lends itself as well as the schizophrenic experience to the study of the devil. The schizophrenic world in its purest form is a mixture of mysticism and emotional inferno, of penetrating through distorted vision of God and devil, of perverse sex and murderous morals, of sanity to the highest degree of genius and insanity to its deepest depth, welded into a single horrible experience." End of quote. I do not know one single therapist who penetrated with equal lucidity the deeply mystic experience of mental illness. From what Reich writes, we can learn that the irrational blockage against understanding schizophrenia is the same blockage of understanding what today we experience as mass hysteria in most Western nations regarding pedophilia. Another topic often discussed within the anti-psychiatry movement and similar forums are the obvious parallels between madness and genius, a phenomenon that is often bluntly misunderstood, but which is a confusing element, especially in schizophrenia. Dali is known to have said that the only difference between him and a madman was that he was not a madman. Apparently, many elements in Dali's art and in surrealism in general connote mental disturbance, but only if one sees it that way. One could see it as well as a way of perceiving reality differently, or as an attempt to penetrate into parallel realities. Or one could question the concept of an objective reality altogether and conclude as to the existence of subjective reality and individual creation of reality. Reich points out very clearly the difference between a schizophrenic and the exceptionally gifted, and he is very outspoken about the science of mental distortion. I quote, "The schizophrenic world mingles in one experience what is kept painstakingly separate in homo normalis. The well-adjusted homo normalis is composed of exactly the same type of experiences as the schizophrenic. Depth psychiatry leaves no doubt about this. Homo normalis differs from the schizophrenic only in that these functions are differently arranged." End of quote. In my work with voice dialogue, I came to exactly the same conclusion. Actually, during that time, I was prone to a high level of anxiety and some form of regression or ego dissolution through various practices of meditation, fasting, and other extreme forms of self-transformation. we can, in fact, pass healthily through various phases of mental disturbance if only, and this is the decisive point, we maintain a residue amount of mental and emotional balance that enables us to remain the observer of what is going on. Once this observer, which is part of the ego or identity, is dissolved, alien forces, spirits or whatever can penetrate in our psychic landscape, and the result then is most likely some form of psychosis or personality split. The good thing to have passed through all that healthily and later recovering even from the anxiety has given me the privilege to really understand what a psychotic or schizophrenic mind is going through and to what extent such a person is tortured. In ancient times, these extreme forms of mental disturbance were considered as punishments by the gods, and this view still prevails in earthbound cultures. And there may be some truth in it. The I Ching points this out in the 21st hexagram and the Tarot de Marseille in the 16th arcane, and if we take an analogy to Greek mythology, we discover that the legend of King Minos of Crete expresses it in still another form, and then we've got Hamlet. Since my childhood, I thought that poets are closer to truth than other humans, and certainly closer than most so-called mental health professionals. I am glad I never became a mental health professional and could thus remain a human being instead, a person with a simple and intuitive mind. Professionals, as I have known them, live in mental prisons that exclude more knowledge than they can assimilate, and they keep their world hermetically closed through their associations, brotherhoods, circle of friends, social environment, and so on. I have broken free from all those prisons. They were but temporary lodgings for me. Today I do not belong anymore to any professional circle, and I feel I can see the truth in myself and others more clearly while still doing those activities and being this or that for those who think one had to be and to become in order to represent something in this world. Today I dare to be myself, and this gift and the courage that it gives us is the highest gift we have in life. As long as I was kept in those fake worlds of belonging to, I could not see myself as I was, nor could I see the world as it is. And while my interest in Wilhelm Reich's research dates back to my early times at university when I began devouring his books, it was only many years later that I realized how systemically sound this exceptional queer doctor was, and how many of his revolutionary discoveries have formed part of perennial wisdom. And at a time when quantum physics was not yet popular, Reich was one of the few scientists who acknowledged that there is nothing observed without the observer being involved in some or the other way. Throughout the history of mankind, we can observe that those who were rejected as offenders most of the time did not offend anybody. Their tragedy was that they did not fit into the behavior codex and thus defied the custom settings of their culture's root program. The truth is that these people are the scapegoats of the masses because they stand for a higher vintage of truth, being simply themselves truthful without playing the social Me Too game. Psychologically, the process is easy to understand once we grasp the concept of projection. Projection occurs when we deny parts of ourselves that we do not accept or that we are afraid of. What then happens is that those blind spots in us disappear from our aware consciousness and get repressed in our subconscious mind. As a result, we project those characteristics, desires, traits of behavior patterns onto others and construe a belief system that secures us from rediscovering the truth that we have decided to hide from ourselves. As this happens on a larger scale, social tolerance gets lost in the process, and more scapegoats have to be slaughtered for society to maintain their shallow and life-denying setup. All this we know it, but few of us really act upon this truth. Among those who do are the so-called schizophrenics. Reich remarks several times in his study that typically schizophrenics are hated for their outspokenness, their lack of tact, their bluntness in saying ugly things that we all try to hide from the surface of our daily routines. Thus, they trigger the projection process in the majority in an especially stringent way, in that they often point the finger on the wound, telling people their most hidden thoughts because they perceive other people's thoughts intuitively. And this behavior is then interpreted as aggressiveness rather than as what it truly is, an attempt to opening up a deeper form of exchange, a more truthful and rewarding one than the usual hypocrite way of dealing with each other in civilized society. Of course, their disturbance makes it often impossible for them to be listened to without apprehension, without suspicion or estrangement. And that is their very tragedy. But in trying to understand them, we are going to better understand ourselves and the world as it is, and we can question so many of our false friends, inside and outside. Reich lucidly comments, I quote, "The fact is that the schizophrenic is, on the average, much more honest than homo normalis, if one accepts directness of expression as an indication of honesty. Every good psychiatrist knows that the schizophrenic is embarrassingly honest. He is also what is commonly called deep, that is, in contact with happenings. The schizoid person sees through hypocrisy and does not hide the fact. He has an excellent grasp of emotional realities in sharp contradistinction to homo normalis. I am stressing these schizophrenic characteristics in order to make comprehensible why homo normalis hates the schizoid mind so much." End of quote. Before I am going to discuss the case report in detail, I shall provide some further explanation on the subject of the typical Reichian bioenergetic healing technique. This is so much the more indicated as Reich's approach to psychic health is fundamentally different from mere psychoanalysis. Reich himself points this out at the beginning of the case study. I quote, "The psychoanalytic arrangement of mental functions according to the three great realms of the ego, the superego, and the id has to be sharply distinguished from the biophysical arrangement of the functions of the total organism according to the functional realms of bioenergetic core, parenthesis, plasma system, periphery, parenthesis, skin surface, and organ energy field beyond the body surface. These two theoretical structures describe different realms of nature in a different manner. Neither is applicable to the other realm of organismic functioning. There is only one meeting point of the two theoretical schemata, that is, the id of psychoanalytic theory, where the realm of psychology ends and that of biophysics beyond psychology begins." End of quote. For those trained in Freudian psychoanalysis, the Reichian healing method is often misunderstood or even belittled, or it is argued that it was immoral or against the rules of the art to touch the patient's body. In fact, to take a critical perspective, it appears that Freudian psychoanalysis more or less denies the existence of the patient's body and takes a much longer way to access the core problem. The way a Freudian analyst works is deprived of emotions. Symptomatically, it is considered inappropriate to show any emotion from the side of the analyst. The Freudian therapist suggests to the patient's subconscious that he better not show emotions, thus being rational all the time. What actually happens is that the whole therapy passes more or less through the left brain and becomes a kind of intellectual exercise or mind game. The interaction between analyst and patient is primarily linguistic and does not directly imply emotions, let alone tactile cognition. This is perhaps one of the reasons this therapeutic approach generally takes so much time until an improvement is achieved, let alone complete healing, which is more often than not reported to be the exception rather than the rule. The break between Reich and Freud occurred when Reich started his thorough study on sex research. Freud did not welcome the function of the orgasm and uttered that Reich's work offended the culture. Today, if we ask which approach to healing emotional or mental disease is more effective, the answer is without doubt the Reichian method. Reich rightly attacked Freud's assumptions that a mere linguistic therapy can never effectively deal with the emotional core problem that is at the root of the neurotic symptoms. In Freudian therapy, the emotional scars that cause the disturbance are rather circumvented and appear through associations and dreams. The picture may be clear for the analyst, but it may remain strangely hidden to the patient himself or herself. This is totally different in the Reichian way of healing emotional diseases. Reich early recognized that since the core problem is always related to emotions and emotional energy, the healing can also only occur through accessing and redirecting this emotional or psychic energy. It is this energy that feeds the symptoms. Reich put it that way, I quote, "The most effective therapeutic approach to any emotional, parenthesis, biophysical disease is, if at all possible or indicated, the withdrawal of bioenergy from the biopathic symptoms. In order to destroy psychoneurotic or psychotic symptoms, it is unnecessary and even harmful to delve into all details of the countless pathological ramifications. Instead, opening up the core of the biosystem and establishing a balanced energy economy will automatically make the symptoms disappear, since, seen energetically, they are results of a disorderly energy metabolism in the biosystem." End of quote. It is difficult for most Western health professionals to think in terms of subtle energy and to acknowledge the streaming of the bioenergetic flow in all living, be it in our bioplasma or the atmosphere. This is in part due to our Judeo-Christian heritage, which early denied the existence of the ether and of subtle energies. It seems that nature and natural functions were considered a threat to the life-denying doctrine of monotheism, with all its clear-cut nonsense about life. The sages of old and Taoism acknowledged what today we call bioenergy and the existence of a subtle or hidden truth that cannot be personified into a somewhat materialized form named God or else. Consequently, those sages were perfect healers and knew how to realign the bioplasmatic charge and the balance of yin and yang according to the original setup that nature has coded into life. They could heal with simply laying on hands, or they used plants or massage techniques for healing. Taoism forbade to open the body, so operations were not carried out. We know from various sources that in ancient China, cancer was healed solely by means of a deep tissue massage technique very similar to the one Wilhelm Reich rediscovered for our times. What this massage does is to gradually dissolve the muscular armor of the patient so that the energy clusters that are frozen in this armor can be stimulated and opened so that the energy is fed into the organotic flow. The ancient sages would say that the qi is renewed. This technique is rather difficult to learn and it requires full emotional maturity on the side of the therapist. It is not without danger. Reich warns, I quote, "Great danger arises in neurotics as well as in psychotics when the armor begins to dissolve. Utmost caution and medical skill are required to guide this process. The practice of medical organ therapy is therefore restricted to well-trained physicians. We know our responsibilities better than anyone else, and we do not have to be reminded of them by people who know little about ergonomy. End of quote. With these preliminary notes, I would like to begin discussing the case study, and my attention will be focused upon the question how Reich was able, to use his own words, to remove the psychic energy from the symptoms that are specific in schizophrenia and to redirect this energy into the natural organotic energy flow of the patient's organism. To repeat, the point of departure in Reich's healing approach is bioenergetic, not psychoanalytic. Reich states, I quote, "Our approach to schizophrenia is a biophysical and not a psychological one. We try to comprehend the psychological disturbances on the basis of the plasmatic dysfunctions, and we try to understand the cosmic fantasies of the schizophrenic in terms of the functions of a cosmic organ energy which governs his organism, although he perceives his body energy in a psychotically distorted manner." End of quote. This is very important to stress in order to avoid misunderstandings. It would be highly misleading to say that Reich treated schizophrenia psychoanalytically. I am convinced, not only because of the scarce contribution of Carl Gustav Jung that I cited above, that psychoanalysis cannot successfully treat schizophrenia. Without understanding the bioenergetic streaming of the organ in the human organism, as well as in any other phenomenon in nature, Reich could never have seriously claimed to even try to heal schizophrenia. It was his breaking away from psychoanalysis and his discovery of the muscular and characterological armors that enabled Reich in the first place to consider mental illness in a hitherto new and revolutionary way. It was his experience as a physician much more than his knowledge about psychology. Doing this, and I say this as a heartfelt compliment, Reich situated his healing approach on an equal level with the old Chinese healers who directly manipulated the subtle energies, and he successfully put a distance between his healing approach and the ridiculously limited effectiveness of Western medicine. That is, in my view, the main reason that his contemporaries, and especially his medical colleagues, so viciously attacked him. I am sure that artists and people who know intuitively about the subtle truth of the bioenergy, such as spiritual healers, understood him much better. When a Chinese doctor or a Tibetan healer approach a sick person, the first two things they check are the pulse and the breath. A well-trained Tibetan doctor can diagnose a disease years in advance simply by listening attentively to the pulse and putting his ear and hands on the chest of the patient, listening and feeling if the breath is shallow or deep and diaphragmatic. Here is what Wilhelm Reich stated when, during the first session of the treatment, he diagnosed the patient's physical setup. I quote, "She seemed not to breathe at all. On physical examination, her chest appeared soft, not rigid, as in cases of compulsion neurosis. This softness and mobility of the chest were later found in other initial schizophrenics. It should be further investigated whether and to what extent the lack of armoring in the chest is or is not a characteristic of the schizophrenic biopathy." End of quote. It appears that Reich, while not being sure about all the details, was putting the finger on the wound. There was a paradox. The chest was not armored, yet the patient did not breathe deeply. That did not seem to make sense. And it was later this paradox, as it is so often in science, that led Reich to the solution of the riddle. The interesting thing is that this case was Reich's first attempt to heal schizophrenia, and he was well aware of the challenge. I suppose Reich had to keep that treatment secret at the time, since most of his colleagues would have either laughed at the idea to heal schizophrenia, which was held as something absolutely impossible to cure, or they would have tried to impede Reich from completing his treatment. Reich pursues, I quote, "When I asked the patient to inhale and exhale audibly, she refused. It was later shown that she was unable to do it. She seemed to stop the respiration somewhere in the cervical segments." End of quote. This first observation at the beginning of the treatment was very important, yet it seemed somewhat insignificant, or would have seemed so to any other physician but Reich. Indeed, even the layman reader may reflect a moment on this somewhat strange behavior. Why should a person be unable to breathe deeply if it was not a muscular problem, a stiffness in the body? If the body is supple and flexible, why should the person not move the diaphragm in order to deeply inhale and exhale? Could there be anything on a psychic or involuntary level that would impede a person from breathing rightly and deeply? This first question was exactly the question a Chinese or Tibetan or any natural healer would have asked, and not only in cases of mental illness, but in every case of illness. Western medicine, on the other hand, used to violate the patient rather than helping them to collaborate in the healing, ignorant about the true roots of life and consequently about the effective possibilities to bring about healing. Western medicine, especially since Louis Pasteur, was obsessed with illness, with microbes, with malefic bacteria, completely fixated on the rotten, the dead, the pestilent, rather than on the healthy and natural, the stamina of life. Reich, by contrast, took a pro-life approach. He was optimistic that he could heal the patient, but he was careful. He knew if he'd go too fast, he would not only miss the chance of a true healing, but even endanger the patient. To counter this danger, Reich used a therapeutic technique that intelligently and flexibly combined somatic and intellectual interaction, resulting in both body and mind being involved in the healing. Until the sixth session, Reich had to acknowledge that he was still right at the beginning of the treatment. It was then, and only then, possible to penetrate at a deeper level of the patient's personal history and to let her remember events during puberty. He writes, I quote, "She realized that she held on to reality only with great effort. She had felt as though she were hanging over an abyss most of the time, especially during puberty." End of quote. I know from my own experience with psychotherapy that the care every good therapist takes at the onset of the therapy is an essential basis of the later success of the treatment. When I first went into therapy, I met a transactional therapist who practiced a presumably very effective mixture between transactional and gestalt therapy, forcing me right in the first session into a hypnosis in order to upreact what she called my pent-up aggression against my mother. When I refused hitting my imagined mother with a tennis racket, she said I was completely perverse as I was dangerously inhibited to lash out violently against my mother. I never went back there. She might not have been wrong with her analysis, but she was certainly ignorant how to safely launch the release of pent-up bioenergy. Reich stresses this point in his report of the eighth session with the patient. I quote, "It is an important rule in disarming people to proceed slowly, step by step, and not to advance further into the biophysical depth unless one knows exactly what is going on and unless the patient has become accustomed to the situation which has already been reached. This is valid for all types of medical orgone therapy. It is especially necessary in the treatment of schizoid characters. End of quote. No wonder why there is so little success in healing mental illness if we consider the aggressiveness and brutality that surrounds mental institutions and that is since centuries in our culture the standard in treating mental illness. Reich revolutionized this whole system and his writings unveil how exceptional such a new approach is in the still highly violent environment of mental health care today. But perhaps the most important is the role that respect plays in the whole of the interaction between the psychiatrist and his patient. Informed professionals, if they care at all, may know about the great work of alternative psychiatrists such as Ronald David Laing. But they hardly know that 20 years before A. Laing, there was a Wilhelm Reich who knew all that and practiced it patiently and despite all the hatred he had to sink in for being too different, too daring, and yes, too lucid. And this very lucidity was held against him as a sign of his own mental illness by the most sordid of all his enemies. Reich understood the schizoid character not because he himself was schizoid, but because he was naturally compassionate and intelligent enough to be able to penetrate into the situation of another and to perceive the tragedy of another's life. Reich stated in the 8th session, I quote, "Schizophrenics are able in their lucid periods to see through individual and social matters intelligently, as no other character type can. Later we shall see that this lucidity of intelligence in the schizophrenic is one of the major dangers which threaten his existence in present-day society." End of quote. Respect, care, and understanding are the foundation that the schizoid patient needs for building trust with the healer. Without trust, the chance of healing is minimized to zero from the very start of the therapy. The lack of trust between patient and psychiatrist is probably the main reason for the misery in our mental institutions, not lacking knowledge, not a lacking number of staff and all the rest of pretexts that are commonly forwarded by professionals in order to cover up truth about mental illness in our society. The lack of effectiveness in mental health care is primarily due to the lack of respect, the violence and brutality that this society inflicts upon all those who are different from its rosy foam of normalcy. In addition, the presumed clear-cut distinction between mental health and mental disease does not exist. The borderline is a gray area that is defined differently by different mental health professionals, by different mental health schools or methods or social environments or cultures. Reich, commenting on what the patient called the forces, that is, the voices she more or less unwillingly followed, comments, I quote, "In contradistinction to the schizophrenic structure, the structure of homo normalis keeps one or the other of the contradictory structures continually in a state of repression. Thus, in homo normalis, the split of the personality is hidden." End of quote. If we take Reich's social diagnosis serious, we come to realize that schizophrenia is not a mental disease, but a cultural phenomenon. If we are all schizoid because of the denial of our true nature, we indeed only differ from the schizophrenic in that we hide this inner split, this dualism, this deep fragmentedness, whereas the schizophrenic, essentially more daring, more honest, and perhaps more intelligent than we are, openly unveils and expresses it. Of course, there were and are psychiatrists who have this respect of the schizophrenic in a way I'm talking about, and some of these doctors said that every madman is a saint. Reich states, I quote, "Therefore, let us be reasonable. Let us abandon our false righteousness. There must be a potent reason why the schizophrenic is treated so cruelly And the cruel Homo normalis is honored so crazily all over the planet. End of quote. Reich was perhaps the only scientist and medical doctor who, in our culture, has shown and openly expressed his wound, his shame, and his indignation about the suffering of the human nature in our world. If we did not know who he was, we may take him as a peace apostle, and I mean this absolutely in the positive and innocent sense of the word. After all, he has written a book entitled The Murder of Christ, while he was not a pastor or theologian. He was against all religions and all pastors, but he truly practiced the only right and natural form of religion, which is compassion with suffering. He wrote, I quote, "We must try instead to understand it when the schizophrenic expresses rational functions in a distorted manner. Therefore, it is necessary to judge him from beyond this orderly world of ours. We must judge him from his own standpoint. This is not easy. But if one penetrates the distortions, a wide vista opens up on a vast realm of human experience, rich in truth and beauty. It is the realm from which all the great deeds of genius emerge." End of quote. Accompanying the patient on his regression into childhood, Reich found his theory of the repression of early childhood sexuality as a primary reason for the characterological armor confirmed. He comments, I quote, "Such armoring usually results from cruel punishment for quite innocent behavior in childhood." End of quote. But it was not before the 11th session that Reich really understood what was going on in his patient. Again and again, his conclusions were overthrown by the patient. Again and again, what seemed to have been achieved in accompanying her, in trying to understand her, seemed to melt away like a foolish error or a frantic idealistic idea that had no true reality. The results that Reich could book positively seemed minimal compared to the continuous drawbacks that occurred during this treatment that went over about 2 years. One or two of those drawbacks could have been fatal for the outcome of the therapy, and the danger of suicide of the patient was imminent during the whole treatment. The red thread that led Reich and his patient during this whole process, the only thing they could count on was what happened on a feeling level with the patient. Only insofar there was a slow, very slow progress. What happened was that the patient had come in touch with her feeling level, and this contact turned out to be the golden key for the later healing. However, Reich knew this only intuitively at the start, and he was not sure that this was really the most important part of the treatment. It was only after the 11th session that his intuition had reached a kind of condensation and confirmation, and that he could summarize the results in the following 3 points. I quote, "During this session, the prospects of her therapy had become clear. 1. The more and better contact she made with her plasmatic bioenergetic streaming sensations, the less the fear of the forces would be. This would also prove my contention that the forces in schizophrenia are distorted perceptions of the basic organotic organ sensations. 2. This contact with her body sensations would help to establish some degree of orgastic satisfaction, and this in turn would eliminate the energy stasis which operated at the core of her delusions. 3. The undistorted experiencing of her body sensations would enable her to identify the true nature of the forces and would thus slowly destroy the delusion." End of quote. However, the goal was not yet achieved. It was actually only the first step that was made. Point 2 and 3 were only expectations, logical perhaps, but nonetheless unreal at the present state of the treatment. Reich had no illusions as to the further steps to be taken and as to the drawbacks that might occur along the way. I quote. Before this could be accomplished, the patient would have to pass through a series of dangerous situations. Delusions and catatonic reactions were to be expected with each breakthrough of strong organotic streamings in her body. She would perceive these sensations with terror. She would block them off by bodily rigidity, and the blocked off plasmatic currents would be transformed into destructive impulses. Therefore, the secondary impulses, which derive from the blocking of the original basic emotions, would have to be handled carefully and would have to be let out slowly, step by step. This danger would become especially great when the first spontaneous orgastic contractions of her organism began to occur. End of quote. With this turn, the therapy entered an abyss, and the story, as most of Reich's treatment stories, became more of a frantic thriller than the dry report of a physician writing a case report. The patient had committed a suicide attempt shortly after this session, yet she had been saved in the very last moment. She had hurt herself badly with a razor, but quickly recovered. The more Reich opened her bioenergetic channels, the more the distorted orgone, DOR, was set free in her organism, and the usual law of hate, confusion, and accompanying aggressiveness against her therapist began to develop in the patient. Reich knew about this very complex and somewhat dangerous process from the start, and he naturally focused upon its positive part, that is, the liberation of the patient's natural organotic streaming. Yet he was aware that the life-denying education and all the self-hate of the patient would make this process a difficult one with many drawbacks. He comments, I quote, "We have seen how the sweet melting organ sensations, the most longed-for experience in the organism, are dreaded and fought off as brutal flesh in the sense of homo normalis and as evil forces or the devil in the psychosis." End of quote. I think Reich was only logical to draw conclusions from the observations of the individual suffering that pertain to a more collective level or to mankind as a whole. He writes, I quote, "I would like to stress this structural function of the armored human animal most empathetically. To the biopsychiatrist with long experience in organ therapy, this dichotomy and ambivalence toward one's own organism appears as the crux of the misery of the human animal. It is the core of all human functions, which are deviations from the natural law of living matter. It is the core of criminal behavior, psychotic processes, neurotic dreadness, irrational thinking, of the general basic split into the world of God and the world of the devil in human intellectual existence. What is called God turns into the devil by exactly these distortions of living functions, that is, by the denial of God. In the schizophrenic, these natural functions, as well as their distortions, appear in quite an undisguised manner. One has only to learn to read the schizophrenic language." End of quote. If we read the schizophrenic language of many a journalist, we can see how deeply the schizophrenic mindset is part of our culture, part of our so-called civilization, that is haunted by obsessions, fears, and collective hysteria, and that at present again borders public paranoia with its witch hunts, persecutions, slander, and public punishments of the most cruel sort, and this primarily in the culture that once came up with one of the best human rights agendas in human history, the United States of America. Reich was very aware of the social and political implications of his research, and he had to face persecution, first, since he was of Jewish origin, from the Nazis in Germany, who forced him to emigrate to Norway, and then to America, and then he was even more dangerously attacked from the side of fascist circles within American culture. With his usual lucidity, he comments, I quote, "Since nobody but the human animal himself has created his philosophies of life and his religions, it must be true that whatever dichotomies appear in ideologies and thinking stem from this structural split with its unsoluble contradictions. End of quote. A doctor who draws political conclusions from his bioplasmatic observations is necessarily a disturbing force in a society that invests tremendous energy in hiding its split, its wound, and its shame. However, Reich's side remarks did not prevent him from focusing on the therapy, and they represent add-ons to his strictly medical observations and conclusions. Back on commenting on the therapy, he writes, I quote, "It occurs regularly that the patient despises the therapist when the organotic streamings break through. This happens in all cases, including neurotics. It is a quite typical reaction. It corresponds to the hate and disdain shown by impotent, armored individuals toward healthy people and genital sexuality. Usually, anti-Semitic ideas occur at this point, in the Jew as well as in the non-Jew. The disdain usually centers around the idea that the therapist who deals with natural genitality must be a sexual swine." End of quote. Considering these shortcomings in organ therapy, it becomes easier to understand why Reich's remarks so often range at a cultural, social, or political level. Actually, the individual and the collective aspects of schizophrenia can hardly be observed separately. Nothing happens in a vacuum, and things are connected like microcosm and macrocosm are essentially two realms of one single reality. A society of humans that have a schizoid predisposition because of life-alienating structures in child-rearing and the brutal repression of the child's natural sexual emotions cannot be expected to be other than schizoid and to react in a schizoid way. I quote, "Homo normalis does not understand this remoteness and is apt to call it crazy. He calls psychotic what is foreign to him, what threatens his mediocrity." End of quote. What Reich encountered in the treatment of schizophrenics was his patients' high intelligence combined with their boldness and queerness. It was simply their refusal to accept the general residue of human functions that modern civilization requires from the adopted citizen that they defied. Contrary to the normal but neurotic or the normal but sadistic character, the schizophrenic is in touch with natural energies, albeit in a distorted way. Reich writes, I quote, "But the expression of the eyes is deep in both cases and not flat, empty, sadistic or dull as in neurotic characters who have no contact with their bioenergy at all." End of quote. The schizophrenic is on a borderline between the neurotic sadistic and the healthy genital character. When I read Reich, I have the impression that the schizophrenic is closer to the genital character than the neurotic or the sadist are. I quote, "Thus a schizophrenic will fall into a state of disorientation when his self-perception is overwhelmed by strong sensations or organotic plasma streamings. The healthy genital character will feel well, happy, and highly coordinated under the impact of organotic streaming." End of quote. Organotic streaming is excluded in the neurotic and even more in the sadistic character because of the strong muscular armor that inhibits the body of these individuals from yielding to the natural organotic sensations, the hot melting sensations, shortly before and during orgasm, for example. Neurotics and sadists are emotionally cold and they tend to repress and deny the whole of their feeling level. They experience orgasm as a power thing, a way to dominate others, a satisfaction derived from the pleasure to subdue, to control, and to overpower another. Unfortunately, Reich, when asked about those differences, was facing aggressive silence and unwilling resistance from the part of his colleagues, since he seemed to consider the schizophrenic more normal than the neurotic. Of course, to boil things down in such a simplistic way only leads to superficial conclusions. Reich did actually not make a judgment about this matter, and he was unjustly confronted with an attack from the side of traditional psychiatry that was coined in the question, I quote, "How then, if you think that schizophrenia is not such bad a deal, not such fatal a disease, and not such outlawed a behavior, do you explain the dementia and the crimes connected to it that make it the overwhelming picture of the high-strung schizophrenic world? How can you dare to belittle that, Mr. Reich?" End of quote. Reich often had to face such attacks in public, but he was prepared. He never belittled schizophrenia, and he was many times facing criminal behavior from the side of patients directed against him, and sometimes he even risked his life. But he had a sound explanation for dementia, and we have seen at the beginning of this article that, for example, Jung had none. Reich stated, I quote, "The general deterioration of the organism in later phases of the process is due to chronic shrinking of the vital apparatus, as in the cancer biopathy, though different in origin and function. The shrinking carcinomatous organism is not in conflict with social institutions due to its resignation. The shrinking schizophrenic organism is full of conflicts with the social pattern, to which it reacts with a specific split." End of quote. Nobody but Reich saw the similarity between cancer and schizophrenia in that they both are hidden forms of slow suicide coming about either through giving up fighting, as in cancer, or through too much fighting, as in schizophrenia, with the life-denying system that represses the natural life functions. However, on a perception level, the two diseases greatly differ. While in cancer we have less perception, in schizophrenia we have more but distorted perception. The stress is on the less and more. The distortion is an add-on, but the fact is that the schizophrenic lives and the cancer patient is dead, even before the symptomatic illness manifested in the body. The schizophrenic is creative, while the cancer patient is dull. The schizophrenic is daring, while the cancer patient is a bore for himself and his whole environment. Or to state it more bluntly, the schizophrenic is still a sexual being, while the cancer patient has long ceased to be one. In a society that venerates impotence and frigidity as something implicitly virtuous and that is afraid of sexuality, is it a wonder that so much care is taken for the cancer patient and so much money spent on healing cancer, while schizophrenics are for the most part left alone, abandoned and despised by the medical health establishment that puts them on an equal level with the criminal? Reich thought that on a perception level, the schizophrenic even surpasses the majority of homo normalis. I quote, "Although self-perception constitutes self-awareness, and although the kind of self-perception determines the type of consciousness, these two functions of the mind are not identical. Consciousness appears as a higher function developed in the organism much later than self-perception. Its degree of clarity and oneness depends, to judge from observations in schizophrenic processes, not so much on the strength or intensity of self-perception as on the more or less complete integration of the innumerable elements of self-perception into one single experience of the self." End of quote. The higher and the more subtle and refined the perception, the more difficult it is for the organism to integrate what is perceived. The more complex a human mind is, the more it borders the schizophrenic process, because the integrating function of the ego must be stronger than normally, so as to prevent dissolution or split of subpersonalities that a complex mind encompasses. A Shakespeare, a Blake, a Goethe, and a Beethoven border dementia at a much closer distance than Homo normalis, and Reich probably as well. If we have a closer look at so-called mental diseases, we become quickly aware that they are rather emotional diseases, and that the mental deterioration only comes in later as a consequence of the worsening of the emonic setup of the organism. Reich explains, I quote, "Thus we must conclude that the mental functions of self-perception and consciousness are directly related to and correspond to certain bioenergetic states of the organism in kind as well as in degree. This permits, accordingly, the conclusion that schizophrenia is a truly biophysical and not merely a mental disease." End of quote. Reich explains this even more clearly, stating that, I quote, "emotions are bioenergetic, plasmatic, and not mental or chemical or mechanical functions." End of quote. Of course, in a mechanistic universe where every phenomenon is seen separately and without connection to other phenomena, either on the same or a higher level of organization, it can hardly be perceived that mental and emotional functions should be inextricably linked. Only in modern times do we talk about emotional intelligence, although all the poets always talked about nothing else but Homo normalis, with his residual mindset stubbornly denied this fact over centuries and even millennia. I quote, "It is because psychiatry did not go beyond merely historic thinking and exploration that it bogged down therapeutically." End of quote. Only recently we got to see all phenomena connected in one cosmic structure that is holistically coded and situated on both the microcosmic and the macrocosmic levels. Reich had this view decades ago, and he was one of the pioneers of the New Age. By his contemporary scene, a crazy mystic, he was really lucid enough to surpass their residual worldview, stating, I quote, "I am referring here to functions which bind man and his cosmic origin into one. In schizophrenia, as well as in true religion and in true art and science, the awareness of these deep functions is great and overwhelming." End of quote. Reich was not a religious thinker, and he was rather against all organized religion in much the same way as his contemporary Krishnamurti. Yet he knew also what true religion was, and he himself was truly religious in the original sense of the word, linked back to our origins, our true source. That is why, behind the distortions of the split human mind, he can see the unity and the lucidity. I quote, "In such schizophrenic experiences, the world which is called the beyond in common mysticism and in true religion manifests itself before our eyes. One must learn to read this language." End of quote. Reich's understanding of schizophrenia surpassed all what has been written before him from a professional perspective, and he comes close to our great poets when he writes, I quote, "These great souls, broken down and wrecked as schizophrenic, know and perceive what no homo normalis dares to touch. Let us not be led astray by the distortions of this knowledge. Let us listen to what these gifted and clear-visioned human beings have to say. We can learn a great deal from them. We can learn to become more modest, more serious, less gaudy and cocky, and we can start realizing a few of the claims we make in an empty manner in our churches, and in our high academic institutions. I claim, after 30 years of thorough study of schizophrenic minds, that they look through our hypocrisy, our cruelty and stupidity, our fake culture, our evasiveness and our fear of truth. They had the courage to approach what is commonly evaded, and they were wrecked because they went through the inferno without any help on the part of our neurotic parents, our conceited teachers, our cruel directors of educational institutions, our ignorant physicians. They hoped to emerge from the inferno into the clear, fresh air where only great minds dwell. That they could not make it, that they got stuck in the realm of the devil, is not their fault. It is the fault of the abysmal ignorance and stupidity of our homines normalis. End of quote. Progressing in Reich's case report, we become increasingly aware that his initial assumptions were true and sound. In fact, the patient eventually responded positively to the therapy. The drawbacks were expected to happen from the start, and there were perhaps necessary stumble stones or guideposts for the therapist not to lose track of the Ariadne thread, the invisible hand that seemed to guide the whole process. After one of these crises, Reich, somewhat afflicted, yet so much the more passionately involved as a healer, stated, I quote, "Our patient had experienced her emotional storm as great music. The ignoramus will say, that's crazy. No, it is not crazy. A Beethoven goes through the same kind of emotional storm when he composes a great symphony, which provides a huge profit for some utterly amusical businessman. It is obvious that a Beethoven has the structure to stand the same kind of great emotional storm that causes the breakdown in the schizophrenic structure." End of quote. Again, what we usually associate with dementia has little ever in common with the schizophrenic process and is but a symptom, as the cancerous tumor is but a symptom in the greater part of the bioelectric shrinking that cancer represents. I quote, "The emotional and bioenergetic dissociation in the schizophrenic leads, as we well know, sooner or later, to a general decay of the organism with bad body odor, loss of weight, severe disturbances of biochemical metabolism, and sometimes also with true cancerous developments. The schizophrenic shrinks biopathically too, because of the loss of the capacity to take up bioenergy and to maintain its normal level." End of quote. In schizophrenia, we are not only at the borderline between so-called normalcy and genius, we are also at the borderline between what we call rational reality and paranormal reality. Many of the symptoms that the schizophrenic usually exhibits are, at least in a less distorted or exaggerated form, signs of high intuition or sensitivity, as every paranormal exhibits them. Since several decades, paranormal phenomena have been studied scientifically using methods that are rigorous and repeatable and that meet the standards of verifiable proof. For example, Uri Geller, the famous psychic, was tested thoroughly during months at Stanford University for the exactitude of his several phenomenal psychic powers. And those tests and experiments were so tremendously successful that at present no serious scientist can contest anymore the validity of psychic powers or experiences. That was, of course, very different at the time Reich wrote this case report, and again we see in his remarks that he was a true pioneer of the new age. I quote, "The orgone energy field meter, construed in 1944, parenthesis reference to the discovery of the orgone volume 2, 1948, demonstrated the existence of an orgone energy field beyond the skin surface of the organism." End of quote. Long before the construction of this field meter, Reich mentioned, Mesmer construed a similar device in France, and other devices are reported by Theosophical Research and noted in the annals of the International Society for Psychic Research in London. Similarly, with regard to what is commonly called a sixth sense, Reich states, I quote, "The existence of the sixth sense, the organotic perception beyond the surface of the organism, can therefore not be doubted." End of quote. In modern psychiatry, we recognize not only the split personality, but equally the borderline personality, allowing a large gray area that surrounds the more and more relativized concept of normalcy. However, at Reich's lifetime, this was quite different. I quote, "It is very difficult to formulate in words the experience in which a process in the organism is perceived and yet is not perceived as one's own. But there can be no doubt whatsoever that this is exactly the key to understanding the schizophrenic split and the projection of bodily sensations." End of quote. It might be a key to understanding schizophrenia to see it as a distortion of the natural perception of bodily sensations and to start the treatment from there. Reich's success in treating the patient organotically rather than psychologically indicates that this is the perhaps only valid approach to healing schizophrenia. At the end of his report summarizing the treatment, after the 35th session, Reich was eventually convinced that his initial assumption and his perceptual approach to schizophrenia was true. He then refers to all he went through in developing the new science of ergonomy he has developed and how the general ignorant public reacted to it. I quote, "For more than two decades, I had experienced and understood the murderous rage against me on the part of people who became frightened to death by my scientific factual description of the organotic streamings. I had met this terror in presidential candidates, communist liberators, fascist mystics, well-adjusted psychoanalysts, neurotic court psychiatrists, neurosurgeons, directors of mental institutions, cancer pathologists without hope, schizophrenics, politicians of all kinds, scheming wives of co-workers, etc." End of quote. He then continues, I quote, "Let us pause for a moment again to think over this situation. The therapeutic result was doubtful as far as restoration of complete sanity was concerned. As a clinical confirmation of the whole theory of organismic organ biophysics, the situation was invaluable, rich in possibilities, with a broad outlook on the whole realm of human character structure. To sum it up, the following conclusion seemed safe. 1. The murderous hate I and my co-workers had met in so many people, laymen and professionals alike, was true to the provocation of spontaneous movements in the body, in bodies which had never experienced such autonomic movements, well known to every healthy, unarmored individual. 2. These movements, if alienated or excluded from the realm of full perception, that is, self-perception, constitute the experiences of every kind of mysticism. That a psychopath like Hitler preferred to kill in spring thus becomes easily understandable. 3. The influencing forces in schizophrenia are identical with the plasmatic movements in the organism. 4. Many types of crime and murder are due to such sudden changes in the structure of potential or actual murderers. 5. Chronically armored human organisms tolerate only low levels of bioenergy and the corresponding emotions. What constitutes high-pitched joie de vivre in unarmored individuals, their buoyancy, their aliveness, namely the functioning of bioenergy on a high level with a strong energy metabolism, is utterly unbearable to the armored individual. sudden changes from a high to a very low level constitute acute depression. On the other hand, sudden changes from a chronically low to a very high energy level constitute dramatic and dangerous situations because of the inability to tolerate strong sensations and emotions. It is therefore to be expected that biopsychiatry will sooner or later succeed in describing human structures and characteristic reactions in terms of bioenergetic metabolism, emotional tolerance of biophysical excitation, and capacity for energy discharge. Such an energetic point of view would enable us to handle, finally, human nature, not with complicated ideas and experiences, but with simple energy functions as we are handling the rest of nature. End of quote. Having gone through the therapy successfully, Reich reported the patient completely healed after a treatment of around 2 years, and she wrote him repeatedly that her mental health was stable and that she was happily married and had children later on. Reich's theory reveals the truth of functional science, of holistic science, which is the energetic view of all life, the view that has prevailed in antiquity and until today in the Orient. Regarding schizophrenia, Reich comes to the logical conclusion that the split is actually not a mental or psychic phenomenon in the first place, but an energetic one. I quote, "The core of the problem is the biophysical split between excitation and perception and the resulting intolerance by the biosystem of strong emotions." End of quote. Concluding the therapy, Reich generalizes his findings and places them into a higher, more universal, and phylogenetically important context. I quote, "In this process of mastering the emotional plague, we shall encounter Homo normalis at his worst, in the form of the writer's mystic and of the mechanic human animal who run away from themselves for exactly the same reasons that forced our patient into the catatonic breakdown. The horror of the plasmatic currents in an organism which has become incapable of coping with strong bioenergetic emotions and has lost the natural function of self-regulation. All attacks upon our scientific work during the past 25 years have come from such individuals in various organizations and social bodies. Homo normalis has fought Orgon biophysics for the same reason that made him burn witches by the thousands, that makes him shock patients by the millions. The horror of the life forces in the human animal, which is unable to feel in himself. If we do not master the courage to maintain this insight, we shall fail as psychiatrists, physicians, and educators." End of quote. And we have to add, that makes him today persecute so-called pedophiles and treat them as he treated the witches of old, and exactly for the same reason, because he fears their knowledge, their love, their compassion, and their wholeness that he has forever lost in his moralistic universe of half-truths, lies, pharisaical hypocrisy, and draconian punishments. There are at all times and in all cultures those who pay for the ignorance and the blind spots of the majority. It is not important what the name of this group is. Today they are called pedophiles. In the past they were called witches, alchemists, free spirits, heretics or subversive elements, and most recently communists. At all times they were thrown in one pot that bears the label schizophrenia. Schizophrenia, seen from this perspective, is more a socio-political phenomenon than a mental or emotional disturbance. What develops first is the reject. What comes next is the emotional disturbance. And what is then, much later, diagnosed as debility or a shrinking of general vitality is again a consequence of the former, a somatization of it. Wilhelm Reich's research has the invaluable merit that it does not only result in an effective medical treatment of schizophrenia, but that it provides all the tools and insights for understanding the deeper roots of schizophrenia on both an individual and a collective level. And as such, it is truly unique and unprecedented in human, medical, social, and political history.